What if The Hobbit as we know it today had been told in a different way? On the last episode, we discovered that around 1960, Tolkien did in fact undertake a significant revision of The Hobbit to reconcile discrepancies in both tone and detail between it and Lord of the Rings. On this week's episode, we'll take a look at the planned revisions for Chapter 1, from the iconic opening paragraph to new details that connect it to the larger history of Middle-earth. The Tolkien Road, Episode 193, The Hobbit, The Lost Chapters, Part 2, A Well-Planned Party. Hello everyone, welcome to The Tolkien Road, Episode 193, The Hobbit, The Lost Chapters, Part 2. Greta, how you doing?
Hey, you know, I'm good.
Great.
I'm very good. How about you?
Doing great.
Fantastic.
This is actually the second podcast we've recorded today, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Hopefully our creative energies haven't already been spent.
Oh, not at all. I'm feeling...
Well, maybe not for you, but you're more of the creative type than I am anyway, so it's not you I'm worried about.
Don't wuss out on me, Greta.
I'm here, aren't I? I'm here. I showed up.
You showed up. You arrived.
I showed up.
You can just mail it in from here. I mean, showing up is 90% of the 90% of the battle.
You
anyway.
Know, you jest, but I truly believe that.
It is true, actually.
It is true.
Maybe not 90%, but it is a significant amount.
Yeah.
So more than it gets credit for.
Agreed.
So I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I'm proud of myself.
You really accomplished something today,
Greta.
I really
did accomplish something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's not the first episode we recorded today because we had the honor to be on... the podcast Pints with Jack today. Pints with Jack.
And it was so fun.
Which is the C.S. Lewis podcast.
The C.S. Lewis.
That's what their logo says. So if you like Tolkien, there's a good chance you also like C.S. Lewis. So if you don't already listen to Pints with Jack, definitely go check them out. Big thanks to David
Bates.
Bates. I knew too many Davids. I was about to say Bates, and then I was like, No, it's not Bigwood. David Bates. Because David Bigwood is a long-time
right.
listener to our podcast.
Right, yes.
And we know other Davids as well. So David Bates, it's his podcast for C.S. Lewis, much like we focus our podcast on Tolkien. And it was totally awesome to be on his podcast. Mm-hmm. And we had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys should all go check that out. Even if you don't like C.S. Lewis, you should go check it out. Or if you don't know anything about C.S. Lewis, because this podcast... I bet will help you like C.S. Lewis or help you gain a deeper appreciation for him. And as you probably know, Lewis and Tolkien were lifelong friends and had a huge influence on one another, right?
Yep.
So that episode will be coming out. I think it's going to be maybe a little over a month before that episode comes out.
I think it's going to be July.
Was it July, he said?
Yeah, because July is Tolkien month on Pints with Jack.
But don't wait around. Like, go over and check out Pints with
absolutely.
Jack and subscribe and... you know, get in touch with what they're doing over there. So
cool. I love the community of Tolkien and Lewis and the Inklings podcasting community. It's pretty, it's fantastic.
It is.
It's really,
it is.
Really cool.
It is great. We are, in fact, we're planning on having David come onto our podcast here soon. And we're going to kind of do the flip around and talk about C.S. Lewis stuff from a Tolkien perspective on that one.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome. Yeah.
Indeed. Special thanks to our patrons. We really appreciate you guys and all that you do for us by helping us out financially to keep this thing going. Don't forget to head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road and pledge $1 or more per episode if you are not already a patron. And we would really appreciate it. Any support you can give in that realm is
absolutely.
Huge.
Absolutely. Every little bit helps.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Please leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us. And then we'd love to hear from you at any channel you can reach us. Best ones for us usually are TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com or through the website, TolkienRoad.com, through the contact form. Or you can reach out to us via Facebook or Twitter too. So, you know, any of those ways works fine. Or leave a comment on past episodes. So any way you want to hear from us.
Yeah.
Or any way you want to be heard by us.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, you want to be in touch with us.
Right.
Yeah.
You said it how I meant to say it.
You're welcome.
One Other quick note, been mentioning my new video series on the Silmarillion, 8-part video series. It's been on YouTube. It's been posting to YouTube. So I just posted the 7th video of this 8-part series. It's the intro to the Silmarillion, and then the 8th one should be up within the next couple of days here, and then that'll be complete there. But I'm planning on having a lot more coming from our YouTube channel, a lot more in the video world. I'm thinking like shorter 5-minute videos on various Tolkien topics, and you don't want to miss it. So head on over to YouTube, check us out, the Tolkien Road Podcast on YouTube, and subscribe to us over there. Yeah. And make sure you get alert notifications so you'll know when we post something new. So, all right. So we're continuing on our deep dive into further things of the Third Age. We spent a lot of time doing a Second Age deep dive, and then a few weeks ago, we started looking at the Quest of Erebor with Unfinished Tales, which goes into a lot of the background of The Hobbit that Tolkien developed, right, later mm-hmm. on after he wrote the story initially.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so last week, we jumped into what's called the 1960 Hobbit, which is a section of John Ratliff's The History of the Hobbit, and which is a huge scholarly book that goes through like the creation of the Hobbit, goes into like the textual history of it. And the 1960 Hobbit is particularly fascinating because it looks at what are these lost chapters, right? Tolkien's effort in around 1960 to rewrite, to refashion the Hobbit mm-hmm. more in the style, the tone, and to bring it into better accord with the detail of Lord of the Rings. All right.
Yeah.
So, this is fascinating. This is a fascinating piece of history for any Tolkien fan, because it lets us know that even Tolkien himself felt like, as time went on, that he wanted to go back and kind of do things over. You know, it's funny. Like, just I'll be a little meta here for a second. I know how long have we been? You know, we're almost 200 episodes into this podcast, right?
Crazy,
isn't it? Right. Yeah. We started this back in early 2015, and you and I have both, I think, become more comfortable in front of the microphone, mm-hmm. better podcasters over time.
I like to think so.
And so I like shudder to think about going back and listening to early episodes. And
yes.
And part of me actually has a thought to like go back and like do like the Silmarillion again, or like, you know, do Lord of the Rings again eventually. But kind of like, it's kind of the same impulse, whether we do that or not remains to be seen, but it's kind of the same impulse, I think, that Tolkien has, where he's mm-hmm. like, you know, I wrote this book, and it was kind of, in his mind, probably looking back on it after The Lord of the Rings and the further work he did on the Silmarillion, it was like, yeah, it's not like the style that I really would have wanted it to be in, and you know, there's things I wish I could do mm-hmm. over, right? Mm-hmm. There's things I wish mm-hmm. I could do over.
Yeah.
So he made that effort. He began down that road and got about 3 chapters in before he apparently gave it up or got distracted by something else and...
Yeah.
And never really had a chance to come back to it and finish that work.
Yes. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense when you kind of, you know, you compare it to, you know, our own personal journey with the podcast. Because mm-hmm. I'll be honest, when, you know, when I first learned that he had endeavored on this rewrite of The Hobbit, I thought, well, that sounds kind of like a waste of time. You know, like, The Hobbit's perfectly fine the way it is. It was a huge success. People loved it. You know, like... Well, you know, spend your time creating new things. Don't go back and redo the old, especially if it was so well received as it was.
Yeah.
But when you explain it that way, I can totally understand. I'm sure Tolkien grew immensely as a writer, you know, in the time between when he wrote The Hobbit and then Lord of the Rings. And I can see why he would have maybe been unsatisfied
mm-hmm.
with the way he originally wrote The Hobbit. So,
yeah. Yeah, totally. You can see these details. You know, another analogy for me is a lot of times as a lover of you know, music, and especially like a lot of popular forms of music, you know, sometimes artists will actually do this. They'll go back and they'll look at something they made, a recording they released when they were young, and maybe it was actually a really popular recording, and then they'll go back 20 years later and they'll re-record it with like all this like, you know, slick studio stuff mm-hmm. and
And
it's rare that they actually succeed in making something better than what they did.
It's true.
When they were younger, because it's almost like they mm-hmm. smooth out all the rough edges, and it's like, but you lost what made that recording
right.
so magical.
It was
the
rough edges that made it special.
There's
made it what it was. Yeah.
There's a great example of with the Police, the band The Police, you know, which mm-hmm. features Sting. Mm-hmm. And one of their big hits, one of their first big hits was Don't Stand So Close to Me. Mm-hmm. And the first version of it was like very like, kind of like had kind of a strong reggae influence, but it was very new wave, and it's a very like classic recording. And then they actually went back and recorded that song around 86 in this like kind of like more like what's the right word? It was like more like adult pop kind of, okay. you know, kind of style. Okay. I actually really like the second version of it, but it's very different, and it's it can be a little jarring. And I don't think there's many people out there who would say they prefer that version to the old
to
version,
the original,
you know? And I think that's true in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
You know, so it's probably not the wisest thing in most cases for artists to want to go back and, you know, recover the past for, you know, what came after. But at least it's interesting to think that this was on Tolkien's mind for a while, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
That he maybe wished he could have a do-over in some ways on The Hobbit. And
yeah.
despite its success, despite how much it was beloved by so many people. And I think what we're going to see today with this is that, because we're going to be looking at the first chapter that he worked, the revisions he made to the first chapter. I think we're going to see that like maybe the revisions... I think we'll get a tone, like a flavor for what he was trying to do, and then we can kind of judge the merits of it, like whether it would have really been, you know, successful or not.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
All right. So, like I said, we're looking at this is from John Ratliff's The History of the Hobbit, and last week we kind of went over the phases. So basically, Ratliff in his book divides the history of the Hobbit into six phases. He says phases 1 through 3 were the original composition of the Hobbit with its first edition in 1937. Phase 4 was the harmonization with Lord of the Rings that happened kind of concurrently with the first publication of Lord of the Rings. And then what we're considering here is phase 5, the 1960 Hobbit, where he sets out to rewrite the Hobbit in the style of the Lord of the Rings. So with this, we're not going to be hitting every single revision because there's a lot of just like slight rewordings and that sort of thing. And you know, we don't have time for all because there's a lot of them. And frankly, a lot of them just aren't super interesting to me. Now I will say this with everything, you geniuses out there, cause we have many like Tolkien geniuses who like can think much more deeply and more nuanced than you and I that mm-hmm. listen to this podcast mm-hmm. and will send us feedback. And I bet that lots of them could look at some of these little changes and be like, well, here's what's super interesting about this. And we'd be like, whoa, that is really interesting. So this is with all things on this show, this is collaborative. We want to hear from you guys. If there's things we don't mention and you notice some particular thing and you do some research and find out the story behind that little change, let us know, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. All right. So the first big change with chapter one is...
The name of the chapter.
That's right, the name of the chapter.
Yeah.
All right.
I think we mentioned this briefly in the last episode.
We did. But it goes from the classic first chapter, An Unexpected Party, used mm-hmm. in the Jackson film for the first Hobbit, first of Jackson's Hobbit films, An Unexpected Journey,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And he changes it to...
A well-planned party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know, just like, what's your first reaction to that, Greta?
Yeah, it's a little, I feel like some of the I was going to say magic, but I know Tolkien hated magic. I like Unexpected Party better because I think an unexpected party is way more fun than a well-planned party.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting how different that makes it feel.
It makes it feel real different.
Right.
I mean, a well-planned party has its merits.
Yeah.
You know, you're probably not going to run out of wine or food or, you know, whatever, but an unexpected party, I feel like those are the funnest ones.
Well, and it's interesting because, it shifts the perspective from Bilbo's perspective to Gandalf's perspective, right? Because for Gandalf, what we've learned from the Quest of Erebor, this is a well-planned party.
Right, because he was behind the scenes planning all of this.
For Bilbo, Gandalf, yeah. It's a completely unexpected party.
That is so interesting. Did you come up with that on your own?
I just like right here on the fly.
That's real smart.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
So even from the beginning, we get this flavor of like, okay, Tolkien, like from the beginning, is trying to cast this story in a from a different perspective,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, we're seeing this perspective not necessarily from the side of Bilbo, but more from Gandalf's side.
Gandalf, right? Yep.
So yeah, and I mean, I think just personally, like, there's this whimsical quality to an unexpected party that you lose with a well-planned
right.
party.
I agree.
Right.
I completely agree.
So, you know, it's, I gotta say, like, not a fan of this new chapter title there. Right.
Yeah. But it, you know, it's probably fits better with the flavor he was going for.
Maybe. Well, let's continue on and see what we think.
Let's do that.
So the next thing is, of course, the iconic opening paragraph, right? Mm-hmm. This is one of the most famous opening paragraphs in all of literature, really. In a hole in the ground, there lived a hobbit. And that first line stays the same, right?
Yep.
Stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another sentence to the paragraph. Okay, so I'm going to read the old one, and then I'm going to read the new one.
Okay.
All right. Not a nasty, dirty, wet hole filled with the ends of worms and an oozy smell, nor yet a dry, bare, sandy hole with nothing in it to sit down on or to eat. It was a hobbit hole, and that means comfort. So that's the old version. And then the new version is, not a nasty, wet hole filled with worms and an oozy smell, nor a dry hole, bare and sandy, with nothing in it to sit down on or to eat. It was a hobbit hole, and that means comfort. All right, so you might not even pick up on this, but there's very slight changes to this, right? In the old one, it was a nasty, dirty, wet hole. And this one is just a nasty, wet hole. And then in the old one, it was filled with the ends of worms. And then this one, it's filled with worms, right?
Okay. So the ends, yeah.
So he's excising some of the wordiness from the old version.
Okay.
Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that may just have been like, oh, I used too many words there. But you can also think of like there is a... All the kind of excessive use of adjective in the old one
mm-hmm.
also lent it kind of more of a fairy tale
yeah,
kind of quality.
More whimsical. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Like you can just hear like a grandfather like reading this to his grandkids.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Whereas the other one sounds a bit more tightened up.
Exactly. Yeah. We're kind of getting this sense of like these revisions are like tightening things up, buttoning mm-hmm. things up a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So, so then we move on and really I'll say this, I'm going to kind of approach the rest of this through like and I've divided it up into really four sections. We've got the prologue, right? Which is kind of the opening exposition that Tolkien gives. And then we've got Gandalf and Bilbo's good morning conversation,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then tea time with the dwarves. And then it stops, the revision stops there and just lists a bunch of Tolkien's notes after that. And we'll go through some of the highlights of those notes as well.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to do a side-by-side comparison of a longer passage from this first section, the prologue of The Hobbit. So we're going to look at the section that in the old version begins at the end of, let's see, it's the end of the 1, 2, 3, 3rd paragraph. And it says, he may have lost the neighbor's respect, but he gained, well, you will see whether he gained anything in the end. And just that compares, like to compare that sentence with the one that exists in the new version, it says, he got caught up in great events, which he never understood, and he became enormously important, though he never realized it. So again, you get that theme of like, this is from somebody else's perspective. This is from a larger perspective, like casting his role in a larger perspective. In the old version, it says, he may have lost the neighbor's respect, but he gained blah, blah, blah. And then in the new version, it's, he got caught up in great events, which he never understood, being, you know, the implication he's being this little fellow, right? And he became enormously important, though he never realized it.
Yeah.
So
that's like, the new one is like somebody looking in.
Right.
Right. It's
somebody with much greater knowledge.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So then we'll continue on. In the old version, it reads, the mother of our particular hobbit. What is a hobbit? I suppose hobbits need some description nowadays, since they have become rare and shy of the big people, as they call us. All right? And then that's where the old version kind of goes into the history of the Took side of the family, and Bilbo's mother being Belladonna Took, and then the Baggins side of the family. In the new version, it reads, how astonishing this was will be better understood by those who know something about hobbits, and some account of them is really needed nowadays, for they are becoming rare, and they avoid the big people, as they call us. Hmm. All right? So, again, it's not necessarily that there's this big change in the facts and in the main parts of the story, but it's in the kind of tightening up of the language and the subtle shifting of perspective to reflect something different. One particularly interesting detail is that in the old version, it speaks about there being kind of this rumor that the Took side of the family had fairy blood, right? That they had they were different than most hobbits, and they had some kind of adventurous fairy blood, you know, that was somewhere in their past, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody kind of looked on the Tooks with suspicion because of that. Well, in the new version, he actually doesn't use the word fairy. He uses the word
elvish.
Yeah, right?
Elves. Yeah.
Because the word fairy had become, even though in the old version, that's what he meant by fairy, obviously that word is not really even a part of Lord of the Rings, right? Or any of the other Tolkien works. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, that's another example of one of these minor details that are a little bit interesting and indicate how Tolkien was going about trying to make this change and make this update to the work.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to say about this opening part, the prologue leading up to the good morning conversation. All right, so...
Good morning.
Right, another iconic moment, right? Another iconic moment with The Hobbit, the good morning conversation between Bilbo and Gandalf, where mm-hmm. Gandalf just shows up on one morning, Bilbo's doorstep, mm-hmm. and they just get into this kind of humorous back and forth about exchanging pleasantries. In right. Bilbo's mind, what he thinks of is exchanging pleasantries, and for Gandalf, it's, you know, something altogether different. So... Let's see. Let me grab that here. Okay. So, get my bearings straight. All right, here we go. So, of course, it begins. In the old version, it says, "Good morning," said Bilbo, and he meant it. The sun was shining and the grass was very green. But Gandalf looked at him from under long, bushy eyebrows that stuck out further than the brim of his shady hat. "What do you mean?" he said. "Do you wish me a good morning, or mean that it is a good morning whether I want it or not? Or that you feel good this morning? Or that it is a morning to be good on." I mean, that passage right there is just, it's one of those first passages in Tolkien where it's just this humorous wordplay, yep. right? It's this yep. humorous little mm-hmm. Exploration of the meaning of words.
Right. And when putting them together and the different meanings they can take on. And to be honest, I hadn't really thought of that before. Like, good morning has always meant to me like hello.
Right.
You know, like I've never really thought of it in those different ways. And I think that's very clever.
Yeah. And it's this little moment of like, Gandalf, this guy is here not on pleasantries, but like he's here to kind of give Bilbo a hard time.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Setting the tone for the conversation that's following.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's getting all up in Bilbo's business, yeah. in other words.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's this hobbit just minding his own business, and here comes this wizard to give him a hard time.
He's like poking him with his staff. Like,
right.
You know.
So in the new version, here's how it reads. "Good morning," said Bilbo cheerily. The sun was shining and the grass was very green, but Gandalf looked at him from under his bushy eyebrows that bristled beneath the brim of his hat. "What do you mean?" he said. "That it is a fine morning and you feel pleased with yourself? Perhaps you wish me to feel pleased too. I may. We'll see." So, I mean, you can immediately see he got rid of the kind of the humorous little
thing play.
What do you mean by good morning?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, is it good morning in the sense of like, it is a good morning, or you wish me a good morning, or what do you mean by good morning?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's a little bit... he's still getting up in his business, but it's not in the same humorous kind of playful way.
Right.
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 So again, we have another indication of like not necessarily the child's story, not necessarily the fairy tale anymore.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, like, I feel like that's one of the, like, that's a great little passage. Like, that's just a great little episode where Gandalf, like, that's one of the best parts of that first chapter, I think.
I totally agree.
Right? Yeah. It's iconic. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, not a fan of getting rid of that necessarily. All right. So, moving on just a little bit. So,
can I say something real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just this thought occurred to me. You know, I wonder, you know, just thinking about those, how to, those, those that conversation is portrayed differently in the two versions. I feel like in the first one, in the original one, Gandalf is relating to Bilbo as more of a child, like as more of an adult would relate to a child.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the second one, it's more of an adult conversing with an adult. And I, you know, I feel like that's, you know, that's what he was trying to do, right? He was trying to, in this new version, he was trying to make it more, maybe more enjoyable, accessible. I don't know what the right word is, but for adults, you know, he's removing some of that humor. He's kind of making it a little bit more profesh. And I agree. I'm not so much a fan.
Yeah. I think he overestimates, maybe in some of these things, he overestimated that they were going to be beloved and, that they were already beloved. Like aspects of this story,
right.
and they do add it a certain charming quality. I mean, it literally, like, built for Bilbo, the story begins in this kind of way, right? It begins from a guy who's, I mean, he's kind of a grown up child.
He is. Right? He absolutely is. Yeah.
You know, he's immature with respect to the realities of the larger world.
Right. And as far as a hobbit goes, he is still young.
But it's also got that quality of hobbit, but there's a hobbitness quality to it too. Like conversations, like the, you know, like I think of in Lord of the Rings where Bilbo has this great line about, I won't get it right, but you know, I like less than half of you as much as,
right.
You know, the funny, like where you have to do the math and to realize it's actually a compliment. But you know, there's all these, like hobbits have all these little witticisms like these, mm-hmm. like little clever sayings like these that are very earthy and kind of humorous,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And seem a little, they can seem a little childish to the greater minds, right?
Yeah.
But that's part of what makes the Hobbit, like what makes Hobbit so attractive.
Right.
Right.
And so lovable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that he needed to take it out to take something like that out in order to bring the story up a level, right? That's definitely how I feel about it. One other interesting aspect of this section of the Good Morning conversation I found particularly interesting is when, in the old version, Bilbo kind of realizes, oh, this is that Gandalf that used to come around and tell all those stories and people used to go on adventures with him. He says, not the Gandalf who was responsible for so many quiet lads and lasses going off into the blue for mad adventures. Anything from climbing trees to visiting elves, or sailing in ships, sailing to other shores. In the new version, it reads like this. Not the Gandalf who used to tell such wonderful tales about dragons and goblins and giants and mountains and far countries and the sea. They used to send many quiet lads and lasses off on adventures, it is said. Any mad thing from climbing tall trees to visiting elves and even trying to sail in ships. Bilbo's voice fell almost to a whisper. To sail away to the other shore. Dear me, he sighed. Do you see the difference there? You kind of have to see this. So,
I feel like I heard it.
So, in the old version, it says sailing to other shores, and it's all lowercase, right? In this one, it says to sail away to sail away to the other shore.
Another almost shore like is capitalized.
Almost like it's to sail away to other shores, right? Or to the other shore.
To the other shore.
So it's almost like he's like singing a song or something, but it's also using other shore in a proper sense.
Right.
He's referring to an actual place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which we, of course, know the other shore is Valinor.
Right.
It's the mm-hmm. Blessed Realm.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no indication of it being a proper place in the old version, right? It's just other shores, plural.
Right.
Well, lowercase and plural.
How interesting.
Yeah. So that is a detail I actually kind of like, is that he's trying to connect it and say, like, you know, even here in Hobbiton at the beginning of The Hobbit, Valinor is a real place, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it may be a place that people speak about and is kind of a legendary place, right? This place beyond the sea. But it is indeed a place.
An actual right? place.
And
yeah.
And I love this moment in the new one because Bilbo's, it's like Bilbo actually kind of gets lost for a second in something that's like a distant memory, mm-hmm. right? And like maybe a memory he used to have of like as a little child, you know, like listening to these stories about great adventures hobbits go on and thinking like, maybe I could go to the other shore one day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's actually a really neat moment to me.
Yeah.
Because we get, it shows without telling that Bilbo still had this thing within him, right? This thing of like, at one point he was this dreamer and he was more Tookish, right? He had that, he was more in touch with that Tookish side of himself, right?
Yeah.
And actually maybe even dreamed of going on adventures himself.
And that he's aware of the history that of, you know, that he is aware of the reality outside of the Shire.
Yeah, at least that he's not completely ignorant
right.
of it, right?
Yes.
Even if it is just kind of a legend, you know, a mythical thing to him.
Right.
Right?
Yes. But he recognizes that it's an actual place.
Right.
That people can go to.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one of these little details that I'm like, mm-hmm. that's pretty cool. I could get on board with having mm-hmm. that in there.
Especially if you have the background in, you know, having read The Silmarillion and The Lord of the Rings, you would clearly know what that was.
Well, what if, I would even say, what if you're reading this for the first time and you read that and you say, to sail away to the other shore, what's the other shore?
Yeah, it could spark some curiosity.
Because where does the story of Bilbo ultimately end?
On the shores of
sailing away to the other shore. Right?
Yeah.
That's where things leave off with him
at the end of Lord of the Rings. You mean, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So it also kind of connects
cool
the dots.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, it connects the mm-hmm. dots to his ultimate destiny, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is cool.
So I'll give that one a thumbs up. I think we've been kind of thumbs down on a lot of the changes so far, but that one's a thumbs up
okay.
to me.
Balancing things out here.
Right.
All right.
We'll move on next to the arrival of the dwarves and then tea time with the dwarves. And I will say there's actually not a lot that I wanted to highlight in this section. The one thing I will highlight is there's a couple of times where Tolkien uses these kind of funny words. He has these kind of funny words in the mouth of Bilbo. One good example of this is confusticate and be bother. At one point when Bilbo's feeling particularly flustered.
Okay.
With the arrival of the dwarves. In the old version, he says, confusticate and be bother, right? Which, who even says the word confusticate, right? What does that even mean, right?
Yeah.
And be bother. These are just funny words because they sound like, you know, the kind of words of that... sometimes I'll do this with, like, you know, I'll, like, add an extra syllable onto mm-hmm. a word just to make it sound, you know, funny or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But that's not the actual word. And that's what it almost sounds like Bilbo is doing here. But in the new version, he changes that particular phrase, confusticate and be bother. He changes that to confound and bother, right?
Yeah, more profesh.
Yeah, more profesh, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so, again, like, I'm like, why couldn't it have just been saying confusticate and be bother, right?
That's funny.
It is.
It's funny. And it's fun to say.
Exactly. Like, you know, it's little notes like that, like little things. Little salient moments, right, that stand out and you're like, that make a story even more memorable. Like
right,
this.
Exactly. Right? Exactly, yeah.
So a little change in style. I got to say I'm thumbs down on the updating of these words that may not mm-hmm. actually be words but still communicate what they're trying to say.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. But again, it keeps with what he was trying to do,
mm-hmm.
right? Make it a little bit more adult.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So moving on to, you know, really the rest of the chapter. So after the episode of the tea time with the dwarves, all the way to the part where Thorin says, of course, in about the middle of the chapter, at that point, he's no longer like, we no longer have a text of like the full revision of the chapter. We just have a bunch of notes on what he planned to do and pretty detailed notes in a lot of cases. But I'll just pick out some of the highlights there. So, so the first thing to say is that, thankfully he did not feel the need to do any revisions to the two poems in this chapter. All right.
The one without the plates and the cups.
Chip the glasses,
that's what Bilbo
Baggins
states, yeah.
And then Far Over the Misty Mountains, right?
Those stayed the same.
There were no notes on revising those.
Okay, that's good.
So that is good. And then let's see, I think one of the most interesting sections is where he goes into more of the story on Band of Brass. So let me pull up my notes on this. Let's see.
Who's Band of Brass?
Bull Roar. That's one of the like a way back on the Tookish side.
Oh, it's a relative of Bilbo's?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So gotta update both my stories here. All right. All right, and so they're talking, Gandalf at this point is trying to build Bilbo up in front of the dwarves, okay? And make him sound much cooler than he really may be at this point. So he says, in the old version, Gandalf says that he's as fierce as a dragon in a pinch, okay? And in the new version, it says, as brave as Bandobras at a pinch, right? So, and then the next paragraph goes into the background of who Bandobras is, which is, he's Bull Roarer Took, right? So the old Took's great-granduncle, okay? So somebody who goes way back, I guess if he's the old Took's great granduncle, then he wouldn't have been directly in Bilbo's line. But nevertheless, you know, instead of comparing Bilbo to a dragon in a pinch, he compares him to one of his old line. And what's interesting about this is this means that if Gandalf is making this comparison with this guy Bandobras Took, then the dwarves would have had some idea of who Bandobras Took was, right?
Okay.
Right. So there's like this textual indication that the dwarves would have at least been knowledgeable that, yeah, there have been hobbits that are actually like good in a fight, you know, in the past. All right.
But he does explain in the old version, like he does mention this guy, yes?
This is exposition though. In the old version we get some exposition, but it's not in Gandalf's mouth. It's in the mouth of the narrator.
Oh, okay. Right? So Gandalf would not have communicated that to the dwarves.
Right. So it goes on in the next paragraph right after that in the old version. It says, if you've ever seen a dragon in a pinch, you will realize that this was only poetical exaggeration applied to any hobbit. Even in Old Took's great-granduncle, Bull Roarer, who was so huge for a hobbit that he could ride a horse. He charged the ranks of the goblins of Mount Graham in the Battle of the Green Fields and knocked their king, Gulfimbal's, head clean off with a wooden club. It sailed 100 yards through the air and went down a rabbit hole, and in this way the battle was won and the game of golf invented at the same moment. In the new version, that becomes, no doubt an exaggeration, but Gandalf was doing his best in a difficult situation. For Bandobras had been the old Took's great-granduncle and usually called Bull Roarer. He was so huge for a hobbit that he rode a small horse. At the Battle of the Green Fields, when the hobbits were driven back, he charged the ranks of the goblins of Mount Graham and smote their king, Gulfimbal, to the earth with his great wooden club. So the battle was won, and there had been none since in the Shire. Even the dwarves had heard of Bull Roarer Took. All right? Now, what's the big change in that paragraph?
He took out the golf comment.
Yeah, no golf comment.
No golf comment.
No funny little golf comment about the invention of the game of golf.
Because that's really funny.
It is.
It's really funny.
I mean, it's kind of corny, but it's like, but it's funny. In the Hobbit, it's another little classic moment, a little classic like aside that you remember clearly from your readings of the Hobbit.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
It may feel slightly out of place, but it's also a play on the name of the Goblin King, right?
Gulfimbal.
Gulfimbal, right? So yeah, no comment on the invention of the game of golf, you know, at the same time as winning this battle in this new version. So, like you said, profesh.
Trying to
make it more profesh.
Yeah, I kind of like though that he name drops in the new one. Because that would have increased Bilbo's esteem in the eyes of the dwarves.
Exactly. I think two things to this. I think thumbs down on taking away the golf comment,
totally.
But thumbs up on, I actually like as brave as Bandobras at a pinch, right? It actually makes it sound like they're actually are hot, like that Gandalf isn't just completely like, you know, full of you-know-what, right? Like that he's actually got a case to make that, you know, this guy Bilbo may not look like much, but trust me, I've got a feeling about him, and there are hobbits. He's, you know, he is related to hobbits that have done good things.
I mean, what kind of guy? Like,
this is a podcast that children listen to. So,
I'm sorry. I'm so bad. I was just going to say, though, I mean, to win a battle and invent a new game, like all at the same time, mm-hmm. that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. So, the rest of the things that I'll bring up are very fine points, and I don't know that they're super interesting. There is a moment where they bring out the map, of course, to the Lonely Mountain, and Bilbo gets kind of excited in the old one because it's like, you know, he actually does like maps, right? He's always mm-hmm. had kind of this thing for maps.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about in the old Hobbit, it talks about how he's got this map of like the country road, you know, around his area. And then the new one, it actually changes that to Hobbiton country. So he's got a map of Hobbiton country, which may be a reference to the map that's included in the book, at the beginning of the book. The next thing I wanted to point out is that stealth is really emphasized when they're talking about when Gandalf's trying to coach them on their best approach to retaking the Lonely Mountain. And I don't believe that word is used in the old version.
The word stealth?
Right. But that would, if you recall from the Quest of Erebor, that was an important thing that was stressed in the Quest of Erebor, right? That stealth was kind of key to this whole thing.
Yes, yes. I remember that now.
And then there's some just minor changes to the map combo at the end of the conversation. And I wanted to take a few minutes to read John Ratliff's analysis of this chapter because I think it's really good. Let me get to it. Oh, here we go. And this is John Ratliff at the end of all of the kind of his all this stuff that he lists out in the chapter. He has this analysis. As will readily be seen, much of the wording of the original book remains, yet the tone is greatly altered. In particular, the voice of the narrator is muted and editorial asides omitted. Wordplay is greatly reduced. For example, confusticate and be bothered becomes simply confound and bother, and bewildered and bewothered becomes instead bothered and bewildered. And in general, the playfulness of the original gives way to a more stately style. Perhaps more significantly, characterization has also changed. Gandalf, for example, now speaks with more authority. He can no longer be mistaken for a little old man in a pointed hat, but this enhanced dignity does come with a price. He is also more remote, less a figure the reader is likely to sympathize with. The change in Thorin is greater. In keeping with his portrayal in the Quest of Erebor, the dwarven leader has become much more abrupt and brusque, and he shows an unhealthy concern over property that anticipates his later fall in the Lonely Mountain chapters. In the original book, his succumbing to the dragon sickness has been a sudden and surprising departure from his usual self, a distortion of his fundamentally admirable personality and a frightening lesson in the corrupting power of dragon-haunted gold. Here, an obsession with his property and grievance over his rights has simply become part of his character, an innate flaw. Like the anticipations of Sauron's fall, Tolkien inserted into some of his later writings, these have had the effect of hinting that the character was corrupt from the beginning, which was very much not the case in the original book. Finally, Bilbo is made more foolish. Someone who loved maps and had his favorite walks all marked out on the neighborhood map made by himself would know that the dragon-haunted mountain they speak of is more than a day or two, or even a few days' walk away. Maps made in the Shire might tend to end at its borders, but he would certainly know that Thor's kingdom and Smaug's lair must lie outside those borders. And this naivete is extended beyond the end of the book. We are told that he got caught up in great events, which he never understood, and he became enormously important, though he never realized it. But this contradicts the Lord of the Rings, where Bilbo took part in the Council of Elrond and learned, if he did not know already from Gandalf, that his ring was the One Ring, who its maker and master was, and what would happen if he regained it. He even volunteered to undertake the quest of Mount Doom himself, which is not so quixotic as it sounds, given that the quest was to rely on luck and stealth, not martial prowess. More importantly, it contradicts the closing lines of The Hobbit itself, where Gandalf, who serves as Tolkien's spokesman more than any other character, assures Bilbo that he played only a small role in all these events. That diminishment of Bilbo, a central figure of the Quest of Erebor, becomes even more pronounced in the next chapter. So it's really interesting because I feel like what Ratliff is saying about this first chapter, at least, is that with a lot of the changes, it may have been that Tolkien was actually creating more problems for himself than he realized.
Hmm.
Right?
Hmm.
It, you know, his words about Bilbo there are actually
really good. That's definitely problematic, I think.
You know, and saying that, like, Bilbo, you know, in the new one, that Bilbo had no idea just how important he was. It's like, well, it seems like at the Council of Elrond in Lord of the Rings, he actually does have a pretty good sense that he's caught up in something pretty important.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Although I think he makes a really good point about Thorin. Maybe the revisions of that character was a good thing. Because I remember reading in the original version that the dragon sickness at the end seems to come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're like, mm-hmm. what? Like, this is so not like him. How did he just, poop, do a 180?
Yeah.
But if he's going to, you know, in the new version, if he's editing Thorin to be more of a jerk from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
the dragon sickness isn't as surprising.
Yeah.
Like, it's more believable, I think.
Yeah, well, and I think given what he'd done in the Quest of Erebor, we can see if, and especially if he was going to reveal more of Thorin's backstory earlier in this tale, then we get a better picture of why Thorin might be kind of this grumpy dwarf lord,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's kind of obsessed with his property rights and that kind of thing, right?
True.
That he feels like he's been denied his birthright,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's room. There may have been room, and it could be that Tolkien, with this first chapter, was trying to open up that space to explore more of those, like the history here.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That could be
with, you know, how he recharacterized mm-hmm. Thorin early on.
Yeah.
So,
I really like the words that he used there. He said how the original was more playful,
mm-hmm.
and then revised more stately.
Yes.
I think that's very well put.
Yeah, which, of course, a more stately style would be in the vein of Lord of the Rings.
Of Lord of the Rings, absolutely.
But, yeah, I think, you know, there's... I think a lot of the changes for me that we talked about, that we hit on, are kind of thumbs-down changes, with a few exceptions overall.
I agree.
We'll have to see how the rest of the, you know, the revisions
work
out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
On the next episode. So, any other thoughts on what we've read here today, Greta?
I don't think so. I think that was good. I enjoyed that.
All right, great. So, yeah, our plan for the next episode then is to look at least at Chapter 2, maybe the Chapter 3 revisions as well. And Chapter 2 will be really interesting because there is a whole section at the beginning of Chapter 2, the new Chapter 2, that is not in the original Hobbit, a whole kind of episode, right? So that'll be fun to look at.
Yeah. Oh, is that what we mentioned briefly in the episode before this about the bridge?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep. All right. Well, let's get to a little bit of listener correspondence. So I actually wanted to hit on two or three short messages today. The first one I want to point out is an iTunes review that really tickled my funny bone. So as you may or may not have heard, a few months ago, we had somebody leave a review on iTunes that was that we kind of poked fun at because all it said was, bad, very bad. And I got a big kick out of that. I was just like, okay, like, fine.
if you want to be like that.
Yeah. And then, so of course, now somebody has recently left us a comment on iTunes, a review on iTunes that says, good, very good. I like your podcast. So I just want to give a shout out.
Thank you.
To whoever that is and say that made us laugh.
It did.
So thank you for doing that. That's really pretty clever. So, and then wanted to point out, another recent review. I thought this was just a nice little message to say, thank you. This podcast has been a blessing. I've always been an avid reader, but recently struggle with reading comprehension due to medical issues. Even writing this review is a challenge. With the help of this podcast, I was able to read and enjoy The Silmarillion. 5 stars.
Mm, that's awesome.
Awesome.
Yes.
Thank you very much. And I wanted to read a quick note from Kimberly, who wrote us about Tolkien's Overture. Kimberly says, I just finished reading your lovely book, Tolkien's Overture. Such a sweet little jewel of a book, and even better, it's exactly what I've been searching for ages, to read an in-depth discussion of the Ainulindale and the idea that all has been crafted from music. especially in this time of quarantine, to read a long-sought mind song is precious to me. I know I will reread your book over and over. Thank you for your work.
Oh, wow.
So very cool.
That
Thank you.
Very, very
Thank
lovely.
Thank you for your kind words there, yeah. Kimberly. And you should all take Kimberly's advice and go get your copy of Tolkien's Overture, of course.
Of course.
Shameless plug. All right. And then the last thing I wanted to read was a note from David G. Dave G. So, and I believe it's been a while, but I think David has corresponded with us before. And he wrote and said, I've been jumping around on episodes as I try to read everything from the Silmarillion to the appendices in chronological order. I just listened to the episode regarding the Barrow-wight and your dialogue about the description of the area. If you have never played Lord of the Rings Online, I'd like to make the case for you to do so, even in a casual capacity, if for nothing else, the geography. The creators of the game have gone to painstaking detail to try and make everything in the world as faithful to canon as possible. Sure, there are some liberties, but man, if you ever want to walk around in the Middle-earth you have read about, this is the place to do it. As you play through the game, you end up in the Barrow Downs, with the slender monuments sticking up from the ground like teeth in the eerie fog. Imagine standing on Weathertop or seeing Bilbo's trolls, or traveling up the Greenway to Fornost. It's all there. Keep up the great work. Wow, that's awesome. So, I finally did actually download Lord of the Rings for my computer, and so I'm planning on starting to play it here soon, because I have heard so many great things about it over the years. So, who knows? Maybe Greta and I will do an episode where we, play Lord of the Rings online a little bit and kind of do some journeying around.
That would be very amusing.
Yeah,
I'm terrible at video games.
Well, I don't know that this is really a game about like being awesome at it. I think it's a lot of it's just being able to like kind of walk around in the world.
I see. So, okay.
I mean, I think there is an aspect of being good at it too. But hey, why not?
You know, I'm game.
Yeah,
for reals.
Yeah, I think it might be a lot of fun.
I think it would be fun.
All right. Well,
let's do it.
Then we're gonna do it.
Okay.
We shall do it.
We will do it.
Coming soon.
Stay tuned.
Fun for the whole family.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for writing. Thanks to our iTunes commenters and to Kimberly and to Dave G. You can send correspondence to us, of course. We mentioned all the ways at the beginning of the episode. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com is the easiest way to get in touch with us. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. On the next episode, we'll continue with the history of The Hobbit and looking at the 1960 Hobbit.
Perfect.
All right.
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
Special thanks to all of our patrons, and especially to our $5 or more patrons, Eric B.
Daniel P.
David B.
Chuck F.
Ish of the Hammer.
Chris L.
James L.
Zeke F.
James A.
Emilio P.
Shannon S.
Teresa C.
Azia V.
Brian O.
You guys rock.
Totally rock.
All right. Thanks, y'all. Thanks for listening.
Yes, thanks,
and
guys.
And we will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all. Bye.